The DL Debate, presented by Brendan Devaney, in association with Sarah's Kitchen and Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love. Book now to enjoy the Sarah's experience.
Welcome one and all to the DL Debate, the championship, and it's into the crunch time, the quarterfinals. We go in the seniors and intermediates. If you're listening now live on Highland Radio or listening back on highlandradio.com, Spotify or iTunes, welcome. Welcome to the show. Thanks for listening in. This has been a big, big weekend in the championship, and I'm delighted on the line. I am joined to run his expert eye over it is Donegal News' Ryan Ferry.
Yes, Brendan, how are you doing? Are you well?
What is the story, Ryan? You're in transit then. We got you on the way to Dublin.
I'm on the way to Dublin all right now. I'm stopping in a car park here in Nova just to pull in.
It's lucky there's a big fee coming to you, Ryan. It'll be well worth it. Ryan, the championship's heating up at last. Ryan, we'll look across here at the seniors. I want to particularly start with the four sides that have got the home draws from the weekend, and Gidor is where we'll start. They had a victory over McCool's, and again one which hasn't, I suppose, set the pulse racing in terms of them kind of stamping their authority. Are we taking anything away from McCool's? I see there that they would 160 a point up. Ryan, was it a case then that they took the foot off the gas? You were down at the match.
Yeah, I was at the game, and possibly they did take the foot off the gas a bit. They were, Gidor probably made a slow start to the game, and for the first 5 or 6 minutes, the game was played at a slow pace, and neither side really imposing themselves on it. And after that, Gidor started to really go after McCool's with their big aggressive press, and that they really reaped the benefits from that and really stretched into the lead. And I think McCool's went 27 minutes without getting a score in the first half, but they finished strongly then, and McCool's gradually got going then as the game progressed, and they actually kicked 5 points on the trot, which is good going. We've seen over the last couple of weeks, Brendan, against the top four teams, teams have really, really struggled to even put 2 or 3 points together against those teams. So to kick 5 in a row was good going. And it was the water break, really, that, we've seen that happen over the last couple of weeks too, where it just can steady teams. And Gidor, they saw their lead cut back to 2 points, and then the water break came, and they were able to steady things, slow it down, get the pace of it controlled again. And Gavin McBride came on in the second half, and he won a couple of frees, and he scored a couple of points, and that just settled Gidor. Again, you'd have to say, they weren't flying it. Now, McCool's aren't bad, they're a good, strong, mobile team. Gidor, you'd have to say Gidor will be favourites when the sides meet again in 2 weeks' time, but, I'd say Gidor, they just aren't hitting those heights that we've seen, particularly 2 years ago, and even last year at stages.
And Ryan, tell me, a couple of injuries, Neil McGee and Micheál Carroll.
Yeah, well, Micheál Carroll didn't play, and Neil McGee went off injured after about 25 minutes, and they were saying it was possibly a hamstring injury. Now, there was no great signs of that on the pitch, he didn't pull up short going for a sprint or anything like that, so it's possibly not that bad, perhaps it's just a slight tweak or something, and maybe, when they're already through to the next stage, maybe they're not taking any chances. Eamon Collum actually also went off in the first half, or at half time, and Eamon was very lively in the first half, kicked a great point off his left foot. So, they'll be possibly a little bit concerned about that, because, Gidor's panel perhaps isn't as strong as it was in other years either. So, they want those players back, particularly Neil, because, Neil just keeps everything in line at the back, and McCool's definitely got more scores when he was off the field.
Interesting, and you look at the teams, we're looking for a team to come on and maybe upset the apple cart around the top four, and pre-championship people wonder about St Michael's, like possibly a Glen Swally. Glen Fann have had moments in it, didn't work out for him at all yesterday. I would say the two teams have improved, probably McCool's and Bundoran, the two teams, Ryan, you think, that are coming into this latter stages now on the front foot.
Yeah, well, you've got to remember too about McCool's. The McCool's were in a county semi-final 2 years ago, playing good football. And it didn't really go to plan last year for them, you know, but they've done well this year. And, you know, they've a young team there, but they've, you know, they're good balance to them. Like, and they're not a bad side. Bundoran, I suppose, you know, after losing, you know, probably in a disappointing way in the first day out against the Unions, they've really come back strongly from that and have beaten Termon, Milford and Ardragh all comfortably. You know, when they'll probably be happy enough with their form, and this is a good test for them going in. That, you know, they're I think looking at it, you'd have to say Bundoran at the minute are the fifth ranked team, and you know, and I know they're keen to go on and possibly take a scalp. Now it won't be easy going in against St Unions in O'Donnell Park, but of course they played very well in O'Donnell Park against Gweedore last year, so maybe they'll think they have a chance going into that game. I suppose you mentioned St Michael's. You know, St Michael's have really struggled with injuries over the last couple of weeks. And I was actually talking to a club member of theirs before the championship started, and they were talking about, you know, that they felt that they had a good, strong panel this year. By God, has that been tested, because they've had a lot of injuries. And, you know, Michael Langan, you know, such a huge loss for them when he's not playing. Like, you know, you have to probably rank Michael Langan in the top five or six county players that we have in Donegal at the minute. So for him not to be available is huge, and I don't know if he will be back or not for the quarter final. So he's definitely a huge loss for St Michael's.
Yeah, that was the feature game yesterday on Highland Radio in the Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure Senior Championship, and I think Union's very polished performance again restricted Michael's to only seven scores. You know, if you look at the seven scores, Niamh Connell conceded eight and Kilcare conceded six, and really, you know, we talk about their forward power, but defensively, you know, we're seeing everybody playing quite similar. Ryan, it's pull the 13 back and 15 if possible. It's all about then having those players that can cut and get beyond the opposition's defensive line. And St Union's certainly have played those yesterday, and an easy victory for them. And Niamh Connell again, you know, you're just again, you're talking about squads here with Gidor, you know, six lads out who, you know, would make any team, I think, in the county sitting out of this one, and they still, you know, had a handy victory, 170 to 8 points. And again, Niamh Connell learning anything in this championship? You know, certainly not against Glenswilly, even though it was in the Glen, it was one-way traffic.
Yeah, it was one-way traffic. Are they learning anything? I don't know. I suppose, I'm sure they're probably learning, you know, different things about their panel and, you know, players who combines well with each other. I suppose the big thing of note maybe that I would take from it is that Dermot Malloy really seems to be back to his best. I think he got 1-4 yesterday, man of the match. I seen the goal, and it was a lovely, lovely finish. And, you know, Dermot was, I suppose, probably coming off the bench last year. He was struggling a wee bit with injury, but he looks really, really sharp this year. And that's huge for Niamh Connell. You know, they look ruthless. They look relentless at the minute. Now, they haven't played, you know, they've played teams that you would perhaps expect them to win comfortably against in probably all of their games. So, you know, I'm sure they'll get a good test at some stage. Now, Glenfinn definitely put it up to them last year when the sides met in Glenswilly. You know, and Niamh Connell will be well aware of that. You know, it's a bit of a local derby as well. So they'll not be taking that game completely for granted. But, you know, you have to say Niamh Connell look to be going well. St Unions also look to be, like, that was a fine one they had over St Michael's yesterday. You know, like, there was the sides drew at the Bridge last season, you know, so, you know, there seems to be a bit of a gap developing. I know St Michael's have been injured, but Brian McIntyre, I think, scored 4 points yesterday, Brendan, and he seems to be really, really flying it at the minute. You know, he was excellent against Killybegs last week. He was superb after coming on against Kilcare, and he's, you know, a really good player, and he's developing into a leader for that St Unions team. Pádraig McGettigan seems to be finding his feet at full forward, and Niall O'Donnell was back in there yesterday as well. I suppose the big thing for St Unions is Conor Morrison's injury, and, you know, that's a huge blow, because Conor Morrison is probably one of the best man-marking defenders in the county, and while St Unions, you know, do have options, you know, it's not just too easy to replace somebody like Conor Morrison.
And just going to Kilcare, you know, Glenfinn, you're thinking of a possible maybe a tough game or a workout, but Kilcare looked like they really flexed their muscles. And again, without Owen McHugh was back, a huge plus to them. Steve McBurdy missed a game, and Andrew McLean had both injuries. And you look at Kilcare, of all those games at the weekend, I'm kind of looking at that game, they look like they're shaping up as well, Ryan, in the great form coming into these quarterfinals.
Yeah, they are, and I'm sure they're delighted to get Owen back on the pitch. And I don't know if they have a game or not in the regional leagues next week, but if they do, they'll be looking to get a run out into him as well, into that, and to gear up for that quarter final contest. And they do look to have the bit between their teeth, Kilcare. You know, they appear to be in good shape. They're beating teams that you would expect them to beat and beating them well. So you know, they look to be going good. I suppose they will be concerned about particularly the Stephen McBurdy injury, because you feel if they are to get their hands on the Dr. Maguire, they're going to need Stephen McBurdy in good form to do that. But I'm sure John McNulty, he'll be very happy with how they're going. They have their home quarter final. We're presuming it takes place in Towny. You know, there's a bit of talk that maybe not all games will take place at the home venues. I'm sure Kilcare and the other teams will definitely fight for their home advantage. And, you know, if the game does go ahead in Towny, it's hard to see past Kilcare in that game.
Yeah, certainly. So that's the quarter final. So it's Niamh Connell at home to Sean McCool's, Gudor at home to Glenfinnan, Kilcare at home to Unions, and Unions, or Kilcare home to St Michael's, and St Unions playing Bundoran. So that's that set up. The teams that have survived in the league and lived to fight another day in the championship are St Noel's, Four Masters, Killybegs, and Glenswilly. And you know, having seen Killybegs play yesterday, Ryan, there's certainly question marks about what it might have been. It was a tough couple of draws for them. They obviously lost opening day to Glenfinnan, which still feel aggrieved about. But just watching them yesterday, you talk about certain players, Hugh McFadden, just, you know, in terms of being an impactful player, I don't think there's a more important club player to his county player that's as important to his club as Hugh. He was just on a different level there yesterday. Also a great game from young Jack McSherry, but Hugh was the difference between the teams. And Killybegs, although retaining their status, will think that they could have maybe made a mark in this year's championship.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair shout on Big Hughie being one of the most important players. And you know, he's just so big and so strong and so powerful, and you know, teams really don't have somebody to match him. And in most cases, like, I know big Sean McGilligan did reasonably well on him for St Unions last week, but you know, not a lot of teams have that man that's 6'4" and 15 stone and able to mix it physically with Huey, you know. And I suppose, like, you know, you look at Killybegs, and they would have been very disappointed with losing to Glenfinnan the first day, and I know Huey went off injured that day. And their draw after that, you know, Gwydor and St Unions, you're not expecting them to win those games anyway. So, you know, they had to win down in Dunloe, and that was an impressive victory for them, you know. And I suppose you're looking at Dunloe, people are saying, Bren, that Dunloe were unlucky in a lot of the games they've had. But I would probably look at it the other way, that Dunloe were fortunate not to draw any of the top four teams. And when you're not taking into those big four teams and you're playing other sides of a similar level to you, you've got to be beating them if you want to stay out of the relegation playoffs. And Dunloe didn't do that, Brendan, and that's where they ended up in the relegation playoffs.
Talked to Tony Boyle yesterday, Ryan, and they're missing quite a few players. I think it's been a tough season for them, but you're right, yeah, they didn't draw any of the top teams, and really when it came to it, like Killybegs, like, blew them away at a period. They hit 1-6 without reply, and the game was over. So down to those relegation playoffs, and you've Dunloe versus Ardrah and Milford versus Terman. So it's hard to pick a side out of that. Ryan, Ardrah, of course, went down very badly against Bundoran yesterday, only scoring 3 points, conceding 1-15. So, you know, the teams in that, I suppose you'd probably put maybe Milford and Dunloe slightly ahead of Terman and Ardrah.
Yeah, but, you know, I suppose if you look at it this morning, talking about it, I would say those four teams will all think they have a good chance of escaping relegation at the minute. You know, to me, you wouldn't look at it as say any team are definitely clear of it. You know, I think Milford will be very disappointed to end up in it, because, you know, they were 7 points down against Four Masters yesterday. They came back to be a point ahead, and had they just held on to win by 1 point, you know, they would have missed out on it, and I believe Glenswilly would have been in the playoff. But Sean O'Kennedy got a late leveller for for Masters. So that's a big blow for them. They play Termon. The two sides met in a relegation playoff 2 years ago, and it was a really tight game, went to extra time, and Termon won that game. You know, so good local derby there as well, and both teams will think they have a good chance of winning that game. Dunlow against Ardrath game should be another close match. The thing about relegation playoffs, Brendan, you know, it's a slippery slope. Teams are coming in there with bad form, and it's really about, you know, rolling up the sleeves and getting the results, you know, because, you know, you look at it, and we've maybe not as much in senior level, but definitely in an intermediate level, we've seen it over the last couple of years that it's not necessarily the weakest team that goes down, you know, it's the team that doesn't produce it on those couple of days. And we've perhaps seen that with the likes of Buncrana and Downing's being relegated with, you know, and to the junior championship with teams that you'd be thinking, you know, definitely shouldn't have been relegated. But, you know, if you just don't produce the goods on the given day, it can go against you. So those four teams that are in the senior relegation playoffs, you know, they'll all think they have a good chance of escaping it, but, you know, they'll be a bit worried that, you know, their form hasn't been great, and, you know, that, you know, they really need to step up now, and you need everybody rowing in together and trying to get out of it.
That's it, Ryan. Produce it on the day, my man. That's no one better said. That's what you got to do in championship. And Ryan, just looking across to the intermediate championship, we have our quarter final pairings sorted. Buncrana versus Fannad, Leave Columba versus Mallon, Clochanilly versus Red Hughes, and Eirua versus Neave Wurra. Buncrana coming up from the junior championship, really making their mark there. They had a victory against Neave Columbkill there on Saturday evening, and you had the unusual situation of a hat-trick in both seats. Shane Monaghan scoring a hat-trick for Neave Columbkill, and Jigger O'Connor a hat-trick for Buncrana, but they're flying it in that, and at this point, would you put them as favourites, Ryan?
Put Buncrana as favourites?
Yes.
I probably wouldn't, Brendan, if we're being brutally honest with it. I still think, you know, that they were in the easier side of the draw, and, you know, the other teams are the likes of Clochanilly and Eirua, they're well battled hardened, and I think you would have to still rank them above Buncrana. I suppose the thing about Buncrana, and it's great to see that Dara O'Connor seems to be back and, you know, going well, and, you know, he's had an awful, awful time with injuries, like, and you're just hoping that he can stay injury-free now and get a good go at it, because, you know, it's not that long ago that man started an All-Ireland final, and, you know, he probably hasn't started a huge amount of games in the 6 years since that. Like, so you'd just be hoping that he gets a good run at it. But Buncrana, you know, by the chat of it, that big Peter McLaughlin is going very well in midfield, and they've Keelan McGonigal in midfield as well, you know, so, you know, it's going to take a good team to get the better of them in the middle sector. Jack O'Loughlin, the county hurler, is back as well this year. He played a bit last season. He's going in a full back, and, you know, he's a good competitor. Like, so he'll be fit to mark pretty much any forward that's going in there. I saw Fannad against Eirua down in Port Salon on Saturday. Thought Fannad battled well, but probably a bit of lightweight up front. You know, I don't know if they just have the firepower to take down Buncrana, but at the same time, you know, I'd say they'd be happy enough to go to the Scarvey and take on Buncrana, and, you know, you'd have to expect Buncrana to win that game, but it could be tight.
Mallon had a bad start. They're coming with a late run, and, you know, again, a lot of pedigree in that side as well. So as you're saying there, Ryan, the intermediate championship, there's so many teams in there have the capabilities and the abilities to go up and win that title, and actually there's a couple of teams in, you would think, have the bed and they come on the senior championship and hold their own, but first it's a matter of getting out of that intermediate and winning the title.
Yeah, like, probably looking at it, and, you know, it's probably harder to win the intermediate and get up to senior level than to stay in the senior championship, you know, with the relegation playoffs and things, you know. With Mallon, I suppose, you know, they struggled for form over the last 2 years, but I see Benny McLaughlin is back for them now, and he's a really good corner forward, and he'll be a big, big addition. They didn't have him in last year's championship, so, you know, to have him back there, and Christy Fildara McLaughlin and Paul McLaughlin, like, they do have good players, and Josh Conlon, who was involved with the County Miners last year, I think, you know, so they're not bad, but, you know, looking at it, and you know, if the home advantage does play out, and Neave Columba are home to Mallon, like, that is some trek for a championship game, like, for Mallon to go down to Glencolumbkill. You know, I don't know, what are we talking, you know, two hours maybe more. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's, you know, it won't be easy playing a championship game after making a trek like that down there. But I suppose Neve Columba have earned their home advantage, you know, and they'll be looking to win. Looking at it, Aaron Doherty seems to be really coming alive at centre half forward for them. Ryan Gillespie, Lanty Molloy's going well. I think Gary Carr was I don't know if he played for their seniors or not, but he definitely played for their minors last week. You know, so he's a good forward as well. So, you know, Neve Columba are looking fairly strong, and I think they'll get the better of Mallon in that match.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, listen, all the play out, there was talk of pulling these games forward a week. They're all going to be the first week of September, fascinating championship. Right, just a quick word on the ladies' championship. The Melville Glen Finn game was called off at the weekend, unfortunately, because of the tragedy in Quigley's Point. Terman hammered Neve Connell, Geraldine McLaughlin, with the usual 2-5. And the big two are still on the collision course for this final.
Yeah, I was at that game yesterday morning in Burnham Road, and it was a funny kind of game because, you know, it was only 5-2 at half time, and Neve Connell came with a game plan, a defensive game plan. Now, they were probably never going to win the match with it, but, you know, they were a young side and they were game and up for the challenge. And they kept Terman scoreless for 17 minutes, you know, which is good going, like, when you consider that you've Geraldine McLaughlin and, you know, Roisin Friedland and Roisin McCafferty and these girls to try and keep quiet, like, you know. And Terman were always probably likely to wear them down, and they did, but Terman probably didn't play to their potential. Like, and you know, if Glen Finn were looking at it, they would be thinking, you know, well, we would have a good chance against it, you know, Melville possibly as well, although you'd have to expect Glen Finn will get the better of Melville, you know, in the semi-final. That's due to take place in Parkivoga. So, you know, it does look like it's geared up for another Terman Glen Finn final. I suppose maybe neutrals around the county would like to see that, because it probably would be a good final.
Yes, indeed. And Unions and St. Noel's, I think, in the intermediate, to see who comes up to senior. They both are good ones at the weekend. Ryan, listen, brilliant roundup. Thank you so much, lad. You get back on the road there, but stay in the speed limit, okay?
I'll try. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ryan. See you soon. As usual, a brilliant roundup on Donegal GA from the Donegal News' Ryan Ferry. Thanks so much for that, Ryan. We now turn our attention to Chief Sports Writer with the Star, my man Cunningham. Kieran Cunningham is on the line.
Good, Brenda. Thanks. How are you?
Kieran, listen, you know, you're quoted as saying you always like to find what makes people tick when you're interviewing them. I wouldn't mind finding out what makes you tick today. I was just having a look back at your evolution in terms of being a young man out in Glencolum Kill, going to Carrick VS. You went on to Trinity, no problem, to graduating from there. You went to work in the Stag's Head Bar in Dublin. Nice part of your...
Where are you getting all this stuff from?
You taught English in Bologna. Very interesting stuff. Right. And you were more into music here, and you then fell into journalism by accident. But listen, it was certainly something that I think it was a good accident to get. And you worked then at the Sun, Sunday Times. You lived in London for a while, Irish Post, even in Echo Cork, and now 22 years as chief sports writer with the Star.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'm just curious where you got all this info.
You know, but, listen, I know you're not a man for compliments, but anytime I talk to you or interview you, there was a thing there years ago where a lot of these talk nights were on the go. And I remember when I was driving them, a lot of them be up in the north and that, I used to always ring you because you would always pull up things or issues or things that just would make me think. And that's why I was interested to see what makes you think, because I know
Bob, that you're... But normally I used to ignore your call, Brandon.
I used to pester you, but the whole thing of the journalism, Kieran, I'd say you were a bit more into the music at the time. You're a bit of a hipster, I would say, around about those Trinity days.
Yeah, I don't know if that word was around then, but no, I was. Like, I'd still be big into music and stuff. But, like, I had always had a huge interest in sport, but I never thought it would work as a sports journalist. Like, I was always very keen on radio more than anything. And my thing, I wanted to do radio documentaries, but there's no money in that in Ireland. Like, even RTE, you know, if you got two a year as a documentary maker, you'd be doing well. And, like, the fee you'd get for that, you know, it's a pittance, really, for the work you put in. So I had to do something else, but I wanted to go to work experience in RT, and the only place that had a vacancy at the time was Radio Sport. And because I did a week in RT Radio Sport, I got offered other bits and pieces of sport from other stations. And it just kind of built from that. I kind of really fell into it. But I do enjoy it. But like the main interest I have is interviews rather than covering the events. So I do, as you say, like finding out what makes people tick. And I like nothing. That's the most satisfying part of it to me, is getting a decent interview. You know, rather than being at the games, you enjoy being at games and everything else. But that does, even when you're at big games, it becomes routine because you have, it's the job, and you know you have a lot of work to do. And it's not like going as a supporter or just to enjoy it. You're not, you know, it's a very different experience. So the more refreshing part is if you do sit down with whoever it could be, from Mark English, the athlete, to Michael Murphy, to, you know, to Katie Taylor, you know, just people from all different kinds of walks of lives and backgrounds, and seeing, you know, how they got where they are now.
Yeah, you're right, Kenny. Funny, yesterday I was doing updates for Oisin at the game. Now, normally I'm doing co-com there. The commentator has a lot of the job of marking off a lot of the stats and that, and you're kind of looking at maybe the tactics and the flow of the game and certain things that happen. But just doing those updates and having to have your eyes on everything on the match, there's quite a bit of tension attached to that. It was hard to listen. I didn't enjoy doing that yesterday. Oh. You're really,
and like I find now, because these days as well, there's a lot of emphasis on stats. So you know, wide you would have always tallied up, but you know, you want it, they want all the frees, and you know, you want all sorts of different stats, and even ratings. Like ratings are ludicrous now, because when you're 42 players say playing in a game, between subs, how can you mark every, you know, while watching a game, while doing everything else, how can you assess 42 players? Like, it's rubbish, it really is. But when you've all this stuff through in your going through your head, you know, you're not getting a proper feel for the game. Like I would think, you know, that whole thing has to be rethought. You know, if you want somebody doing stats and ratings and stuff, just get a separate person to do it. Because when you're doing everything else, doing the report and quotes, etc., it's too much. Like, and you know yourself, there's no credibility in it. Like, it's the thing people latch on. Excuse me, Brendan. You probably know it yourself when you're a player. If somebody gives you 4 or 5 out of 10, you have a grudge against them. And you know. And that fella, you know, you're not thinking to yourself, well, that fella had a lot of work on. Like, he might have just struggling a bit when he got to the ratings part.
That's a big question, kind of, you know, pulling those two sides of a part, the person, the player is a man and a person in his life versus the sportsman. I find that a lot of people, you know, even get that with managers in later on, you're not criticizing the person or the player, you're criticizing, say, their performance on the pitch. But a lot of people have real issues with keeping them two things apart, and then they get their back up, and you might meet them then on an evening, and they want to let you know about it.
Yeah, because it's something that's often brought up around the GA, especially, Brendan, because they're amateur games. I know people talk about, you know, you can't personalize criticism of amateurs. I know, and that is a valid point. But then defining what is personalized, I think everybody looks at it differently, or a lot of people look at it differently. Like, to somebody, if you say to somebody, you know, he was really poor yesterday, or, you know, he didn't perform at all, somebody might think that's a valid criticism. Another player might think that's really personal. So it's how you judge. Like, RT pundits, particularly over the years in the Sunday games, have been hammered over personalized criticism. And I think there is a line that you cross. Like, if you're taking the piss out of somebody, like, of their appearance, or, you know, making some smart comment out of it, I think that is crossing the line. And it's a lesson I learned. I remember Val Andrews ringing me up when he was cabin manager, and I'd written a column, and there was something, there was stuff around before whatever championship game Cabin had played that year, that they had something like 200 training sessions. And they lost heavily then the first round of championship. And I don't think there was a back door then, so they were straight out. And I think I meant some kind of smart-ass comment. They should have brought the ball to some of the training session. And Val rang me up, and he was very annoyed, and he was right too. And he was on about all the ball work they had done. And that made me think about it, and I addressed that, you know, that you have to be, it's not all about being a smart-ass remark that you would pass at a bar. You know, you have to realize people have put on a lot of work here, and, you know, they deserve better than that.
Yeah, good guy, Val Andrews too. Talking about keeping stats, you know, I suppose with football, Ken, the reality is versus hurling, like I chatted Christy O'Connor, the stats that they have to keep up with during games is off the charts. I don't even know how they get their head around it. Christy's a top fella, like, but every block, hook,
You know, but like, as far as I know, like, you know, Christy goes over the video a couple of times and goes through all of that. Like, but that's, you know, it's like there is that kind of debate there or dilemma there about how, you know, you cover things now, because some people want that really stats heavy thing. But other people don't, you know, they want something that's more entertaining to read and it's a more generalized thing and it might focus on a particular performance or particular story behind the teams involved. And, you know, you can go, I think you can go too much the other way, like that it can be like stuff out of a coaching conference. You know, you have to realize that a lot of people don't really want that. Like if they wanted that, they would go to coaching conferences or they'd take the coaching badges and et cetera. But, you know, there's a general audience out there as well that don't want that level of detail. They want something different. So you have to try and find the right balance.
The balance is right. I think it was Arsene Wenger maybe 10 years ago. Remember the big story broke about him signing a player he hadn't seen? He signed him on stats. I remember that came out. I thought, this is getting a bit much at this stage. Can you just give me back? We just did a quick skip through your education and your life, teaching English in Bologna. How could you fill me in on that came about?
Well, it's partly rooted in the time. Like, I finished college in 89, and, you know, the 80s was very grim here in terms of unemployment and immigration, and there were very little prospects. So, like, I had an arts degree, did an English degree, and, you know, what do you do with that? You know, like, there's not many alternatives unless you do another course afterwards, like a teaching diploma or whatever. I had no real interest in teaching here, but I did want to go abroad, maybe try and learn another language. And originally I was looking at, it was Yugoslavia at the time. It was before Yugoslavia broke up. And I remember I actually got a phrase book, Serbo-Croat, and I was trying to learn a few phrases. I was thinking of going to Sarajevo, which ended up being a place you wouldn't really want to go to.
Yeah.
So, but then a friend of mine went to Italy that I was in college with, Andy Fitzsimons, and he went to a place called Modena, which Luciano Pervarotti was from. So I decided to go. I was originally looking at Perugia in Italy. Then I went over just to Andy at the start, stayed with him for a week or two in Modena, and then I moved to Bologna, which is about an hour away. So I stayed there for, you know, the guts of the year. The only problem was I left, the work kind of dried up and I ran out of money. So I had to come back a couple of months before Italian 90,
which
was a bit of a killer that it was over there for nearly the whole year before it, but was gone before it started. But
Yeah. Still some experience, Ken, some experience. You know, just, we obviously, you know, your articles in the Star and we hear your news talk and different things. You've quite a amount of poise when you're asking questions and you're in interviews. How much of that is prep, or is it from experience that you've garnered that's kind of mucking about in your brain? You're thinking things over, and then you just use that when you're in that interview setting?
That's a good question. Like, I think you do have to put a lot of preparation in, like read about the person and listen to other interviews they've done and learn as much as you can. And, you know, with some interviews, I would write down a list of questions, but to be honest, that's very, very rare I do that, because I think it can be dangerous in that you stick too close to that script then, and you're not listening carefully enough. And there might be far more interesting stuff that's coming out, you know, that the person is saying that you need to follow up on, but you're too much focused on your list and, okay, I'll come to the next question. And a lot of it does come down to experience, Brendan. It's experience you don't even realize it's seeping in. Like if you say to me now, or ask me now, what was the Meath full forward line in 1996? You can tell somebody straight away, you know, I could tell you straight away. And that's not from me sitting down to do research. It's just from covering this stuff all the time. It kind of seeps in. So you're doing the work without really knowing you're doing the work. You know, you're picking up knowledge without really knowing you're doing the knowledge. And that's having the interest in what you're covering and the people you're covering. And like, you know, there is sometimes a bit of a difference. Like I would cover the Olympics. And like if you're covering, say, rowing or gymnastics that you would know very little about, you know, you have to do the reading up on that. Whereas if you're covering the athletics or boxing at the Olympics, it's something I'd be more familiar with and would cover more in between Olympics. So it comes easier. So
no, that's that would good. Be so one of the differences. Know, we're speaking of around games. Like I could sit here now and read off a load of questions and maybe be more looking at my questions than your answers, when really you want to develop that. So it's probably just like in reporting on the game, you want to get the mix between the stats and what happened and give a flavour or give an idea of what's happening in the same, I suppose, in interviews. Like you talked about the Olympics, Kieran, you were at Rio. That must have been an amazing experience. You might have missed the Italian 90, but you were at the Olympics, which that's one up on me anyway.
Yeah, I was at the last five Olympics from Sydney. I think it's five from Sydney on. So like it was supposed to be in Tokyo, trying to get the money back from the flight at the moment. But hopefully that'll be sorted. But
you were the last five.
Yeah, it's from Sydney on. So that's 2004, 2008, 2012. Yeah, that's five. Yeah, Sydney was of course 20 years ago. So five.
The internet needs to update itself.
Yeah,
that's bad.
But
you've seen.
Yeah, but what's that?
That's amazing that you've been at those Olympics.
It's a great thing to do. Like it's the hardest thing to cover, you know, by a mile, because if you cover a World Cup in soccer or rugby or whatever, like especially if you're covering the Ireland team there, like you cover Ireland game and the press conferences on the day to day or go to training. But like in Olympics it's completely different because you're covering a range of sports, you know, and especially compared to a few years ago. Now Ireland are qualifying people in all sorts of sports they never qualified people in before, like taekwondo. The next time they'll be the first taekwondo competitor. So like, and rowers are very strong with Ireland traditionally, and rowing, the rowers get in the water about 8 a.m. It's normally a good bit away from where you're staying, so you might be to leave at 5:30 or 6. So you're at the rowing, then you might go on to swimming or gymnastics or golf these days or whatever. Then in the evening there might be an athletic session or a boxing session. So you mightn't finish work till midnight, you know, having been on the go since 5 a.m. And also in very hot countries. So one of my abiding memories of Olympics is you have these shuttle buses that take the media around, and you have a main media center as well where all the journalists work. And the amount of people just lying in the seats flat out or lying over the desks asleep. You know, they're really exhausted by the last few days because you get no sleep. Like it's brilliant to be there, and you know, I wouldn't moan about it. Like it's a privilege to be there, but it really, you know, you need a month off after. Like it really, really taxes you.
I get that. I think people have this idea of anything like that, you're blessed to be there. You know, this whole experience. But if you're working flat out, and there's a tension game because you have to get that report in, and you're thinking, right, what's coming down the line today, tomorrow, the next day, the day?
Yeah, and the other thing, Brendan, is if you go back over Irish Olympics experience, a lot of stuff happens. Like, they become just, you know, a lot of stuff that you don't plan for happens. Like, in Rio, the day before the opening ceremony, Michael O'Reilly, the boxer, was announced he failed a drugs test. You know, then all the stuff that happened with the boxers there, Katie Taylor being beaten, Michael Conlon given the finger, that became a huge story. Then you have Pat Hickey being arrested over, you know, this a scandal over tickets. And that became a massive news story as well. So you, in advance, you might have your schedule worked out. I'll do this on day one, day two, day three. And all this stuff happens and it's thrown at you and you have to deal with it. So you do get a buzz out of it. Like, it's one of those things, like, the amount of journalists I know after every Olympics, they say, that's the last one, I'm never doing it again, it's too hard. But at the same time, when it comes around again, you want to be there, because I think if you're not there, you feel like you're missing out. Because it becomes the biggest thing around. And if you're a journalist, you want to be part of the big stories and writing on the big stories. So it's always great to be there, but it's harder as you get older.
Say that. And suppose people might think, oh, why don't you stay there a while? But if you have a family, you need to come home and you need to go.
Yeah, and the other thing is the schedule. Like, if you look at the schedule this year, the Olympics was supposed to end very recently. And it was supposed to end, I think, yesterday week, or maybe 2 weeks ago. I can't remember. But it would have been a week. It was supposed to end the Sunday before the All-Ireland Hurling Final. So you would have come back and been, you know, as I was over there, would have come back, I think early in the Tuesday morning, and then straight into the build-up for the hurling final. I wouldn't have been able to take any time off, because that's tied in with the way the GA calendar has changed now. So, you know, before you might have been able to take a week's holiday or something, but the way the Olympics and the GA is now, you'd be straight back in to the busiest part of the GA season.
Yeah. And you, I remember years ago, Kieran, just talking about all those different sports. If you have kind of a go-to guy there that's embedded in the sport, it's brilliant to talk it out with them. I remember years ago when America used to ring me and I used to say to you, how are you commenting on the hurling? Because, you know, if you grow up from Glencombe, killing that, you know, you've only, we all got a love for hurling underneath it. But to get down there, you used to say Loch Nan, used to talk things out with him. He was a great
man. Yeah, but like Loch Nan has been with us for the guts of 20 years, and I would have learned a huge amount from Loch Nan. Like, some people say, you know, his views are a bit dated on hurling. I don't accept that. You know, I think he knows the game inside out, and he's very interested. And you look, just from talking to people like that over long periods of time, like, I wouldn't boast about having any great knowledge of hurling at all. And the same with rugby, because I think rugby is very technical. But the more you listen to people around rugby, you do learn stuff. You know, you learn a bit more about the technicalities and the intricacies of it and what exactly goes on in the breakdown and what's the difference between a number 6 and a number 7, what their roles are, you know. Simple things to people within the game, but if you haven't grown up with the game, there's things you have to learn.
Exactly. I remember I was actually in Lanzarote in Ireland. We're playing a rugby match, and this guy sat down at Ireland top on me, and he started talking kind of tactically about the game, and I was just about hanging in there, and I thought to myself, any minute now he's going to suss it. I don't really have a clue about it, but I got away with the first few sentences, and then I thought to myself, I better get out of here quick, because I'd sold him down the road that I am a rugby fan, but just like that, I don't know the tactics enough to kind of get deep into a conversation and stuff, which you got to learn. But
interesting.
Kieran, just looking across the our GAA, there was a report come out in about a hurling match at the weekend in Dublin. They looked for a postponement. The game was fortified though due to COVID-19 concerns. Did you see that story?
It doesn't ring a bell, to be honest with me. There's been a few now. There's been a few in recent weeks. Like, there was a Raheny football one recently as well. That a game was postponed. There's been quite a few around the country of similar instances. So
I'm just wondering, it looks like they look for the game off, but then the GAA says no, it shouldn't go ahead.
Yeah. And
the game was fortified. It was just a hurling match. It was a Clangale against Pally Bowden. But I'm just wondering, Kieran, as things go on, you know, we're hearing words that the senior championship will definitely go ahead. It looks like all behind closed doors. Now, you just get obviously fears with certain games that get in the middle of, as we're getting into the championship a season, if a player or was to go down with COVID, it could throw the whole championship away.
Well, first of all, I don't think anybody can say with certainty the championships will go ahead. Like, I think that's very much up in the air for a number of reasons. Like, a fair amount of the schools go back this week, like my son's school go back this week, and the others go back, you know, over the next week or so. And that's going to be a massive test. Like, you've seen in Germany, in England, in different countries, when schools have gone back, you know, COVID positives have gone significantly up. And, you know, it has to be remembered now as well, the first COVID positives here in Ireland were out of schools. You know, a lot of people have kind of forgotten that. A couple of schools were closed early on. And, you know yourself when your kid's at school, the way things spread around schools, whether it's a flu or chickenpox or measles or mitts or something, you know, they do seem to spread like wildfire. And it's going to be a challenge to keep that in track. And the other thing that's coming is there's a problem with timing with the GAA championships. And they're starting out in October, November. And that's when the flu season really kicks in here. And every year, flu season puts real pressure in the hospitals. And the big issue with COVID is that if there's a big upsurge in cases, the health system here isn't equipped to deal with it because it don't have the hospital capacity and in particular the ICU capacity. So that's why there's such wariness with the authorities about it, because they know they're in big trouble if there's another spike in the winter. So you also have a financial issue coming into play here in Brendan. And Kevin McStay, you know, after he managed Roscommon, he was talking about how much it costs to run county teams. Mm. And he said it cost him 15,000 a week to run Roscommon. Some counties might be able to do that for a bit less. Some counties will be spending more. But there's a thing now where a few counties are saying now, like Derry, you know, Joe Brawley was writing about it yesterday. There's word out of Westmeath. The Leitrim chairman has talked about it. And they're questioning whether No, because there's so little money coming in, like even club receipts now, because there's no spectators at club games. There's very little money coming into the GA. A lot of counties are questioning whether they can afford to go ahead with the championship with no money coming back. You know, and especially counties that know they've no chance of winning a provincial title, let alone All Ireland. So they're looking at this and saying, you know, even if we, you know, September 14th, the official return to training, you know, even if they play the first round to go out, they'll be training for 6 weeks officially. That could cost you $90,000, and you go for what? Now their quest. So there are questions out there, and I just think there's so many imponderables. There's so much uncertainty. Micheál Martin was on the radio this morning, and he said it would be a great symbol of Ireland's fight against the virus or where we are if the All-Ireland finals go ahead. He wants it to go ahead. GA President John Horne wants it to go ahead. Personally, I would love the championship to go ahead for selfish reasons. I think if Donegal get past Tyrone, they could give it a real rattle.
Yeah.
I think this is a real chance for them. But I just wouldn't be able to put the mortgage on it happening at the moment.
Yeah, was there talk of a $40 million loan maybe from the government?
Well, yeah, but the only thing is, you know, that's a loan. Loans are to be paid back, Brendan. And there's a lot of sports out there looking for a slice of that cake. You know, they, like the GAA have taken a massive hit. Like there's a couple of significant rounds of significant wage cuts to staff there already. You know, I think they're going to be down $60 million on the year or something. So even if they get $40 million, which has been quite optimistic, you're still down $20 million, and that $40 million is to be paid back. And we don't know what's happening next year. You know, there's no guarantee to be supporters of games next year either. So this is a real game changer as well, because preparing county teams has cost so much for so long, and now we looks like COVID is going to lead to a serious recession. And the money just won't be there. So what's going to happen? Like something will have to, they'll have to come up with some control on the spending within teams, and managers and players will have to accept they won't get it won't be the same as what was there before. Like you go back probably when you were playing, when you started out for Donegal, Brendan, I'm sure you had to pay for your own boots. You weren't getting training gear like they get now. It was a struggle often to get basic mileage expenses. And I hope we don't go back to something like that. But I think players might be in for a bit of a rude awakening that things will be rolled back significantly in the next few years just because the money isn't there.
Yeah, it's interesting here, because I think people thought there was a huge pot of gold at Croke Park. I mean, Alan Milton's been on the show. The realisation now of that Croke Park, whatever they take in, is used every year and used very quickly. So there isn't this big bank of money behind. You know, just before the COVID hit in, we had obviously the GPA discussions. Paul Flynn was being held up as the bad guy in terms of trying to take money away from the GAA. That's all gone quiet as well, Kieran. So she said there's a lot of, I think, realization now that this constant up and up, and I mean Donegal, the last time I got figures from them, it was $2 million they were on Donegal GA in the year, 1.2 of that was going on the senior team. So yeah, broken down week by week, it's massive money. And I think here as well is that, you know, you look at the preparation of the top teams now versus the smaller teams, the money was a big factor in pushing them up in terms of, I suppose, the lifestyle and the opportunities and the S&C coaches, yeah, and all those type of things were money driven. You know, there's no point in saying otherwise. And maybe that'll even things out again, or will it just be a case of they'll just have to take a step back, but the weaker counties maybe will have to take two steps back?
Yeah, I honestly don't know how it's going to pan out. You know, I hope it doesn't have too much of an adverse effect in that the highest, you know, I've seen more brilliant games over the last 10 years than any other decade since I've been watching football and hurling. And that's, you know, that's down to, you know, great advances in coaching, in the way players prepare and live their lives, etc. And a lot of that money does impact on that. There's no getting away from that. So the problem is, like, you will come back to a situation. Dublin will always have money, you know, because of its size, because of its commercial clout. There will always be money there to be spent on Dublin. Kerry, even though, you know, there's been signs of cutbacks and different things, Kerry have the clout. You know, they're able to go over to America and England, raise a lot of money very quickly. You know, sending over the likes of Jack O'Shea and Bomber, etc. And for a lot of the other counties, like Donegal have done brilliantly to be up where they are for 10 years. But it's been a massive struggle to get the money to pay for that. You know, you still have to pay for the training center and convoy. You know, you're always going back to the clubs and the people on the ground, for, you know, to try and give you a dig out. And Donegal is a country, as a county, that's never really benefited from a Celtic Tiger in any kind of form. And now if there's another recession, I think it'll impact heavily on it again, especially being a border county, when we see when the effects of Brexit become clear down the road as well. So I think it's a big concern. You know, I would just love Donegal to get another All-Ireland. I think there's a window there while Michael Murphy is still playing, you know, because I think, you know, he's just, he gives you more than any individual in any other team has given to their team. You know, he makes the team greater than the sum of its parts. A lot of other good players there, but I think, you know, the few years that Michael has left, and not writing them off by any means, but, you know, like, nobody goes on forever. And I think as long as Michael Murphy's at his peak, you know, we have a chance. But I think this year could be a real chance if a championship goes ahead, because Neil McGee will still be there. Michael still will be there, still going well. You know, I'm looking around, Tyrone be without Cahill McShane. If you get over Tyrone, I think there's a straight, you know, you can get through Ulster, and you're straight into an All-Ireland semi-final then. It's not Super 8s. And, you know, Dublin, losing Jack McCarthy, Paul Clark going as coach, a new manager. There's a lot of change with Dublin. Kerry, I'm just not sure about it. I think attacking-wise, they have it. But defence-wise, they just seem a bit naive still. So I just, I hope the championship goes ahead, because I want to see what Donegal can do.
Yeah, I totally agree. Kieran, just lastly, just taking you up on that tactics point, you know, I think that's a valid point, that when the systems become defensive and entrenched, the football really went down a dark path. But out of that, the skills of the game have gone up substantially in the fitness level. So what you have is still, games still have some amazing moments in it, sure, sometimes it's keep ball a bit. The only downside that, Kieran, I think, is the knockdown to the clubs. And when you have club players in, that you have maybe 13 players playing all the same way, getting back behind the ball, and you really don't have those players with that amount of skill. There might be an odd county player sprinkled in them that might come up with a bit of magic. I think it's really dragged the club football down in many ways. You know, nearly every game I'm seeing now, teams try to leave two up front and 13 come back, and if they can, they'll get the 15 back. But it's often, yeah, you know, a bit... you know, mundane in terms of how the game, you know, yesterday, even I was down in Dunlow and Killy Beggs, you know, it was, I think it was well in the second half where there was a point from play, and that's yeah, kind of where the...
No, that's hard to watch. No, that is definitely hard to watch. And I think with a lot of coaches, you know, it's kind of easy way out for them in a way, is that, you know, it can look, they can come across as being very well organized and having a system and, you know, having put a lot of thought into what they're doing. But really, if you are ambitious, you look around the last few years, even at club level within county championship, very, very few teams are winning anymore, or winning silverware with defensive systems. Like, even, you know, Declan Bonner talked about this, you know, the last couple of years. No, Donegal have definitely been evolved and tried to evolve. They still bring men back when they have to. But if you look at, like Declan has talked about, I think he said you need to look at 20 points to be winning championship games. And Donegal are consistently hitting around that. You know, and that's what you have to be doing now. Like, it's that's the benchmark Dublin set. Like, you go back to your time, Brendan, you'd often win championship games with 12 or 13 points. It rarely happens anymore. So the better teams now that are winning things are far more attack focused. There were others who might progress through the ranks. They might get a quarterfinal or semifinal by being defensive, but generally they don't. You know, they don't win out. So I think eventually the penny has to drop with teams, coaches, and players and clubs. That, you know, it's okay, right? We're keeping the score down. We're winning a game or two, but if we want to really win out and be champions, you have to have more of an attacking edge.
Perfect, perfect. Listen, Kieran, great stuff. Thanks so much for the chat. And listen, positive. It'd be great, Kieran, to see you in Croke Park. We've done Donegal bearing in a semi-final or a final, and we maybe get a chat after. You can tell me the real story of that year you spent in Bologna.
Will do, Brendan. Good to talk to you. Thanks,
Stevie. Good man. Cheers, sir. Bye. Check this. Right, folks, that's a wrap. Thanks so much to my guests, Ryan Ferry and Kieran Cunningham. Thanks to Canis for producing in the studio. And thank you very much for tuning in. I will speak to you next week.
The DL Debate, presented by Brendan Devaney, in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love. Book now to enjoy the Sarah's experience.